It's March 25th, 2009. I'm speaking with Michael Keating of Owl's Head. We've had a chance to have a conversation before about a couple of bills before the legislature, but I wanted to find out more about yourself, how you got involved with fishing, and where you think you're going to go with that.
Well, I first got involved around 2001, started out as a stern man going lobstering, and found myself going through the apprenticeship because I wanted to get a lobster license. But as the more time I put into that, I found out that the rules kept changing as far as entry. Used to be as soon as you finished the apprenticeship, you got a lobster license. But then along the line, they changed the rule of one person out, one person in. And then it changed to five people out, one person in. And now it's just newly changed to 4,000 tags out and one fisherman in. So I've gone on this waiting list of lobstering from 33 down to 11 since 2003, so that's 6 years.
6 years?
6 years.
And do you anticipate another 6 years ago? Or?
Well, I was speaking to a representative from the Department of Marine Resources, and they encouraged me that the next couple of years, they believe that it's going to be a bigger jump, because a lot of licenses that were retired this year were people who were not using them. There was a small amount of tags per person retired. I think it was most of the people that retired, their licenses had between 5 and 100 tags, which aren't active fishermen, obviously. So there's a lot of non-active licenses that were retired this year.
Sounds like the state is being very careful with its management of lobstering.
Yeah, they are definitely taking an aggressive approach, and it's all on the advice of the Maine Lobstermen's Association and its constituents, the lobstermen. They want to have less people in and more people getting out.
Presuming then that those that stay in, the right number, will be able to prosper pretty well then.
Correct. Yeah, they want to see less traps in the water. The fishermen, I believe, want to see less people involved, but not less traps in the water. They want to have be able to stick with their number of traps that they currently have, the 800, without having more licenses come in. So they want to be able to keep their number of traps with less people.
As you say, a very slow process to get into that system then.
Right, which is why I decided to get into scallop fishing. And I figured that would be a great way for me to, walk off a boat as far as going stern man and be able to afford to have my own boat and my own fishery to take part in. At the time, it was open. Now it's has a moratorium on licenses, no new licenses. If you didn't have one in 07, you couldn't get one in 08. And so, no 09.
As a dragger, then, did you decide to work? Did you work your way up from, dredges of skulls being dumped on a deck, and there you are popping meats out? Or
no, I started right out as a boat owner, and right off the bat, I took an experienced person with me, and my wife Sherry, and we took this person, and he broke us in on how to set the drag out and how to haul it back and how to cut. He basically came with us until we got the gist of it, and we took the training wheels off, and away we went.
And how long did you have to run with your training wheels, so to speak?
Well, we're pretty much still running with the training wheels. It's a learning industry every year. Things changed. Where we found scallops in 2003, we're not finding them in 2009. So even though the geographical area doesn't change, where the scallops lie and where you find them does change, because once you catch them, you can't catch the same ones twice. Sometimes they come back to the beds, or the beds stay active, and sometimes they just don't.
Now, do you mostly fish in state waters?
Yes. I had a 400-pound general category permit and never really had the intention of using it, unless it came to that, but I never wanted to live down to the Cape. I never wanted to fish down to the Cape. Mm-hmm. And there aren't many scallops in our deeper waters that is known of. I mean, there are probably a few that people haven't found, but the feds worked on boiling those 385 or so federal permits down to about 70.
Same principle, that less people work it is going to be more scallops per fisherman?
No, I think that was more of a case of politicking from the corporate boats. They argued that the single boat owner fisherman is not as forthcoming as far as landings and taxes. More of it was a less straightforward fishery, and there was a more, you know, it was pitched as more thievery in the industry. So they wanted to, they being the corporate boats, wanted the feds to boil these licenses down and give the corporations or the big boat owners more control of the fishery.
So is this going to be something that the council is deciding, or NIMS? Who's going to end up making a decision on that?
Well, the decision has been made. I'm not exactly positive. I think it's called Amendment 11, has been passed, in which the number of licenses, or the number of licenses, federal licenses that were granted or permits were based on landings and possession of permit during certain years.
Now, I saw in the upcoming council meeting, there is going to be, this is Amendment 15, and do you know anything about what this is, what's coming up?
No, I don't. Initially, it appears on the surface that it has to do with incidental catch of ground fish while participating in the federal scallop fishery.
Well, I guess we'll find out in April about what's going on over there. Mm-hmm. Does TOGE actually keep you all apprised of what's happening in federal waters on scallops?
No, she's mostly state. She handles the state waters for the Department of Marine Resources, but she does do a really good job at keeping people informed of what's going on in our territorial waters. And you know, if you get yourself on her email list, on her contact list, she does a group emailing, and everybody is contacted.
You're listening to a conversation with scalloper Michael Keating of Owl's Head.
Let me ask you about scalloping. I know when someone is towing for ground fish, they try to sort of feel the bottom as their gear is bopping along there. Is that the same with scallops? You kind of, I know you're using sonar, I'm sure, to suss out the bottom, but at the same time, does it get to where you can feel if the dredge is running in the mud or running into...
Yeah, we use a sounder or a fathometer, which gives us a texture of the bottom. And the texture presents itself on the screen by different colors. You know, you'll have hard bottom, which on my fathometer appears as red. You'll have gravelly, sandy bottom, which appears as yellow with spots of red in it, and mud appears as blue. You try to stay away from mud. You try to stay away from extremely hard, rocky bottom, which would appear as like a graveyard on your fathometer. Mm. You tend to look for predominantly gravelly, sandy bottom, and stay away from hard spots, because I've tend to found, and friends of mine that have been doing this longer than I have, find that the scallops predominantly survive best in these gravelly, sandy areas.
Do you get a sense when you're scalloping then, if you're at a place and you find you're getting a good catch, do you get a sense of how large a geographic area? Are they occurring almost like herds? The concentrations?
Beds.
Yes.
They are in bed form, and geographically speaking, they're small compared to the size of the mussel ridges or the bay. Probably, as a guesstimate, would be an area 100, could be as little as 50 feet wide by 300 feet long. It could be 100 yards wide by 300 yards long. And they're usually not in a rectangular shape area. They'll be through dogleg lefts and rights and through these different road, curvy road type areas that lie on the bottom.
Oh, and but they'll tend to stay together as a bed group then?
For the most part, especially if you get into areas where you're finding younger scallops, then it's more bed-like. But there are outlying areas where you find the bigger, older scallops where they're not as dense, and you get a lot less in the same amount of tow time. And it is a fishery where you do feel everything that's going on the bottom. As you're towing a 4.5 or 5.5 foot wide steel baled dredge, you feel every bump along the way. And it's probably one of the more, violent fisheries to the boat. Because, I mean, you can get hung up with a net, or you can have a lobster track hung down, but when you have a direct connection to a steel bale through a main one wire on the bottom, when you get hung down in a ledge or a rock, it's quite jolting.
I was about to ask, if you get hung like that, it brings you to an abrupt halt. It seems like it could just about pull your transom down the water there.
Yeah, it can. Mostly you try to stay aware of, you know, once again, keeping your eye on the fathometer will tell you what your boat is going over. And you can see most of the times a hang up, and will steer port, steer starboard, trying to avoid them, but sometimes they're unavoidable. And if you throttle back in anticipation and you stay aware of what's going on, then usually it's not very abrupt. It's crash, you know, a little bit of bang, bang. Your brake band will squeak and some wire will slip out, and then the boat will just kind of stop and stay in its position.
A couple of curses ring out, I'm sure. Have you ever lost a dredge?
Well,
to a hang up?
I've never lost a dredge myself. I've never pried a wire off, and I've never lost a dredge because I believe I fish conservative on speed. I keep plenty of wire out, and I keep in my mind that I don't have to be fixing things or buying new things. So I operate, you know, with the intention of saving my equipment for tomorrow.
How many of you scallopers are out there fishing the same region?
From North Haven to, we'll say, through Tennant's Harbor to Mosquito Island, first season there was approximately 3 or 4 people. This second season, the second 35-day season, there's probably been a total of 5 draggers and 2 divers, 2 diver boats. There is approximately 5 boats in these Muscle Ridges, and I'd say 5 of them being draggers and two boats being divers.
Are the other draggers, are they young people like yourself, or are they people that are just using that license when, you know, when they're not lobstering, so they're sculloping?
There's one or two people are younger than myself, me being 39. And then there's a guy that I partner up with who's been in the business 35 years, Art Alley. And he's fished every inch of the state of Maine waters, and he's far more experienced, and I have to give him credit for my success this year. And he's taught me a lot as far as reading the bottom and how to operate my own gear. He's kind of helped bring me more up to speed with, you know, being more towards a professional scholar than just somebody trying to scholar.
Because, yeah, otherwise you'd have to be learning these things on your own, piece by piece, so you probably saved a few years of...
I saved many years, yes, yes.
Huh. This is a demanding occupation. How did you decide to get involved in legislation?
Well, the legislation just came about as a bit of necessity. As I saw the Department of Marine Resources taking control of the fishery in such a manner that I thought they were being far too alarmist and way too conservative with no science to back it up, I just thought that if I was going to stick up for myself and advocate for something I believed in, I had to get involved.
Now, I never quite understood from listening to the DMR Deputy Commissioner and others about how they, as you say, how they made decisions to do emergency closures. And this go-around, especially the look.
The best I can figure from what I heard from some of the meetings around the state was that they divided the state up into 10 or 11 different zones and closed every other zone. And it didn't consist of much more technique than that.
So one of those zones, though, was this entire side of Penobscot Bay, wasn't it?
Correct,
including Muscle Ridge and all.
Yes.
Was that a closed?
It was originally pitched as a closed area. The Scallop Advisory Council didn't agree with the closure. The fishermen, very few fishermen, agreed with it. From what I've been hearing, fishermen who aren't using their licenses and don't want to go, they agree with the closures. But the people who are actually depending on that fishery to get them through the winter they don't want it closed. They don't want to overfish it and do imminent depletion damage, but they do want to be able to derive an income from it. So there's not too many people that I've talked to that are actually working that aren't for some sort of closure, but not midway through a season to just pull the rug out from underneath.
Would it be better for them to be trimming it at one end or the other instead of the middle of the season, like you say, to either shorten it at one end or the other of the season?
Well, they implemented a few, we'll say, conservation measures this year. They upped our ring size a half an inch. They closed the season essentially in half. Last year we had 136 or 140 days, and this year we had 70 days, two 35-day seasons with 50 days in between. So there was sufficient conservation measures in place for this season without having to just go and say we're going to shut the entire season down, because a lot of their information, a lot of their paranoia came from reports they were getting from Cobbs Cook Bay, and everybody knows that the entire state of Maine is not Cobbs Cook Bay.
Ooh. About 4 or 5 years ago, there was concern that with Cobbs Cook Bay having a different opening season, that everyone who could get a boat up there was jumping in, and so they'd go through very quick depletions.
Correct, yeah. I've heard stories that I've never taken my boat to Cobbs Cook Bay, and I'm not very hip on transient fishing too far away from home. I believe that Cobbs Cook Bay has a little golden nugget in their own backyard, and it should be left for the people of that area. I don't see it necessary to go down there and fish in their backyard. I wouldn't want them to come up here. So I just kind of practice what I preach in that sense, and they almost should be left alone to themselves, you know, be able to fish
their own
waters, yes.
You're listening to a conversation with sculloper Michael Keating of Owl's Head.
Well, that brings us to this other bill that the legislature is looking at, LD 932, on scallop area management. Now, that would perhaps fulfill that sort of thing, where, because I'd have to assume that Cobbs Cook Bay would be a single area. I don't know, since nothing has been sussed out, what is your sense from what you've heard from Tug Braun and others about what they're looking for?
Well, initially what I believe they're trying to get at is they're trying to get the state divided into zones that can be managed by the local people. She has said at the meeting, we are not considering locking you into a zone yet. So as of now, it'll be a matter of dividing the state into zones that people from their local areas can manage, but everyone can have a say in any zone the way it's set up now. Say, for instance, this is a zone D, and our neighboring zone would be zone C. If I fished in zone C and am aware of where the beds are and where the scallops lie, then I could go to zone C meetings and give my input and have a say in voting or taking participation in the process.
I see, because you literally are a stakeholder then in that zone.
And initially that's how it's being pitched, but I think the long-term goal and what people, especially people of Cobbs Cook Bay, what they're looking at is getting control of their area and getting people from out of the area locked. I'm not saying that that's what they're planning, but if it was me and I lived in Cobbs Cook Bay and that was my fishery, I wouldn't want people coming into the area. And that's how I feel about the Mussel Ridges.
Well, tell me about the Mussel Ridges. It's quite a complicated looking area looking at a chart. Mm-hmm. So many ledges, and I'm sure each of them has a name and is known by folks. And what is it? Is it mostly a very rocky bottom, a lot of tricky currents going all directions?
Yeah, it's a very fortunate piece of proper or piece of bottom to be around, because there's so many places in the state where there aren't scallops, and it just so happens that it's a good area for lobsters, for different types of ground fish such as codfish or hell, mm-hmm. that we have those, an abundance of crabs, and scallops have survived in this area, and it is. The ridges, Mussel Ridges, are mostly known as the inside the islands channel that runs up in mm-hmm. between the inside islands and the main land. But a lot of people refer as Mussel Ridges as even including the islands and small portions of the bay, mm-hmm. too.
It's not just the area that that directly has the navigation buoys taken through it? Or?
Not necessarily, but I mean, some people would argue that it is just that, but it's part of Penobscot Bay, and it's a big part.
Hmm. How about the wardens? How are they? How well do they interact with the fishermen here?
Well, I'm not sure how many days that the boat has been out fishing, but the wardens haven't been aboard my boat once. They've been by us. They've launched the raft around us, mm-hmm. but they haven't come aboard us and had any kind of interaction at all. Not once this year.
Now, is the warden that's for your area there somebody that you've gotten to know over the years?
Not really. I know who the wardens are. But I've had such little dealings with them that they probably don't know who I am, and I know them by face, and I know them by name. I mm-hmm. speak to them down at the fish pier, and they've come down and walked, on the boat and asked a few questions. Mm-hmm. But it's not like it's a daily or a weekly run-in with them. It's so far they've been really good at leaving us alone and just letting us go about our business.
Mm. That seems to be the case of as to others too. They're very interested in you guys making a go of it, and not just figuring out how many fines they can sort of squeeze.
Yeah, so far it hasn't been a gung-ho law enforcement approach from what I've seen. I mean, there has been a couple years ago I was boarded two times within a short period. And they were, they're pleasant enough and professional enough to deal with. It's, it just takes time from the day. And sometimes, I believe that, if they board you once and they've checked your drag, they've checked your ring size, your twine size, and your safety gear, it's pretty much if they don't witness a violation, they have the right. If they, were a license holder, if they want to come on board and check for lobsters or for whatever reason, then that's their right as a law enforcement officer.
The authority for draggers to land crabs is bycatch in Maine. What kind of bycatch do you run up against with your sculpin?
We get sea cucumbers, a few of them. Get some very few small crabs, once in a while an occasional lobster. We get a lot of rocks, and they haven't qualified that as a bycatch yet.
Get your fingers crossed.
Right.
Huh. You mentioned how it seems like there's a fair bit of some ground fish in the ridge.
Well, from going sternman, from talking to the lobstermen recently, I haven't been sternman for a few years, but seems to me that people are catching a lot of cod in their traps, and the halibut have come around a little bit, and it does seem that there are more fish in the waters than there were, say, a few years ago.
Do you have any theories as to how come?
I really don't. I don't understand the biology of the fish. So I can come up with speculation, but that's all it would be. It wouldn't be an intelligent point.
Yeah, you're right. My speculation is that somehow the food supply for the larva is going well, so you're having a better survival, in that sort of age zero stage.
Yeah, it only makes sense that there's got to be more food here, because if there's no food, they don't show up.
Yeah.
So the food must have be drawing them in.
Going back to scalloping, are the lobstering and scalloping seasons separate enough that there's not any gear conflict? You don't have to thread your way around strings of gear?
For the most part, there are a lot of water storage traps out there, neglected traps. Some of them are just hung down or dragged into deeper waters where the buoys won't show even at low tide, and for the most part there's no conflict. There isn't issues where lobstermen are setting gear out right where we're towing. Even if they're setting gear out this time of year, they're in rocky areas where we wouldn't even attempt to go. Our biggest conflict is with people who leave traps out through neglect and throughout the winter, and the wardens do come along, and they do haul this gear, and then they tag it, and they date it. And if it hasn't been taken care of in so many days, I don't know if it's 30, 60, or 90, but then they'll confiscate the traps and fine the owner for wet storage.
Now, with trap tags, it's not a very difficult thing to do, I suppose, to find the owners.
No, and most of them attach to buoys. So they, a lot of them, you know, they'll be grassed up and pretty scummy, but still they have a color to them, and they have tags in them. At least they should have.
Hmm. So how do you anticipate your fishing career to go from here?
Well, it's kind of, it's one of those things that you just can't, it's not obvious on its face. Just looking into a crystal ball, I'd say that probably the state is going to mandate some closures, and they've said that these closures are going to be for at least 3 years. So if they get their way and they have certain areas, 50% of the state, from what I've heard, closed down for 3 years, and people are honest and upfront, and they offer decent areas to be closed, then in 3 years, there could be a decent fishery, but there's 1,000 licenses in the state of Maine. And if people really believe that the three-year closure is going to bring the scallop back to the point where it's going to support 1,000 licenses, it's just going to be a closure with little benefit, because it will be immediate decimation in a short time by great amounts of people.
As soon as it's open, it'll sort of just be a quick derby, snatch them up?
I believe that would be the mind frame of people. A lot of people do have rigging for boats and dredges, and even though it's very expensive to get ready to go, it might take a Derby, Cobb's Cook Bay type approach where everyone wants to show up for the first month and see how much they can get.
This is the Penobscot Bay Report. I'm speaking with sculler Michael Keating about his industry and other fisheries in the Muscle Ridge area of Penobscot Bay.
What about groundfish? If they seem to be making a comeback here in the Outer Bay, do you keep a groundfish license?
Well, I don't. This is the first year I'm actually going to buy one, and I was looking into trying to set some of these cod fishing traps that they've been fishing in Canada and in Massachusetts, but it's illegal to fish for cod using a trap, which is totally ridiculous, because you can fish with an otter trawl, a beam trawl, a gill mat, or hooks and ground lines, and gill nets have been banned in Canada. I don't really like to compare Maine with Canada too much, but I think they are ahead of the curve on us as far as conservation and the marine resources. They've outlawed gill netting for several years because there's so much bycatch that comes up in the nets, and everything comes up dead. Otter trawls are just our typical ground fishing scheme, brings everything that comes back in the net is dead. So it's not a conservative approach to fishing for targeting a particular species. Well, it is for some people, but for some people it's not. Such as you could target cod with a trap, and you would fish for the cod, and predominantly cod is what's going to be in the trap.
Can you describe what kind of trap you're talking about?
Well, the traps that they've been fishing in Canada and down in Boston Harbor are the same size as a crab pot used in Alaska. In Alaska, they fish black cod by using trap. They're approximately 6 foot by 6 foot by 40 inches tall, and then they have a floating pyramid-shaped roof. And the cod go in through heads, and they swim in, eat the bait, see the shiny object that draws them in, they feed, and then they swim up into the floating roof, and then they can't get out due to retention devices. And these traps have been fished successfully in many different areas with like 95% efficiency as far as cod coming back alive. You can release juvenile cod, and they don't catch spawning species, because spawning species don't eat, so they're not entangled in gill nets. They're not wrapped up in any kind of a net because they're hanging with the non-spawning male species.
So it's both low mortality and selective too. Then
very selective and low mortality. Yes.
You say Maine simply doesn't have the fishery at all as an experimental fishery or anything?
It's illegal. To fish for cod in particular, since we're on the cod subject, it is illegal. Under Chapter 34 of the DMR's regulations, only what is listed is what is the only method you're allowed to fish for ground fish. And specifically, traps are not listed. So that means it's illegal to fish for them. Mm-hmm. And the only way to really change that, I was speaking with a Marine Patrol officer just today about it, was to petition the commissioner to change that regulation.
I wonder if... I've seen that the Marine Resources Committee or Marine Advisory Committee, whatever that's called there.
Yeah, Marine Resources Committee.
Been to some of these and seen people come up and give a presentation about an experimental fishery they want to try out. Mm-hmm. Have you considered that as getting a experimental license?
Well, I only found out today that it was illegal to fish the cod by traps. But what I have considered is, instead of trying to go the route of doing it experimental, is just to start right out with trying to gain some support and momentum for petitioning the commissioner to change the rule. Mm. An experimental fishery would prove that the cod podding is more selective and is with less bycatch and less mortality rates, but I believe it's done already, and I can't say for certain, but I think it's been done in Portland. Mm. I'm not exactly sure. I was speaking with Dana Morse of Sea Grant, and mm-hmm. he was trying to get me some information regarding the study that had been done. And I just think that you could spend a lot of time trying to produce data to support what you want to do, but ultimately sometimes it's better to just head right into it head on and attack the ruling on its face.
What kind of depth would you be fishing these then?
I believe they range in depth anywhere from, we'll say, 5 fathoms down to probably 30 fathoms. But I'm not exactly certain. I've never fished for this species before. I'm new to this. Hmm. The first thing I would do is I would go interview lobstermen, and I try to find out where they're catching the cod in their traps, and try to mimic that approach. Instead of trying to approach it from a dragger's point of view, I would approach it from a lobsterman's point of view, because lately a lot of cod have been getting caught in the traps, and it's only beneficial to lobstermen and the lobstering industry to allow it to happen, because cod eat lobsters.
Do you think it might become possible for a lobsterman to lay out a few cod traps too?
I would think that it would be, given the way the lobstering has been heading the last few years, I would think it would only be beneficial if in the springtime, after the spawning season, which is April 1st through June 1st for cod, that people would be laying out, say, 9 cod fishing traps, and the state should, you know, if they do change the regulation, they should keep it a low number, because it has been proven that low numbers of traps catch large amounts of cod. So you'd want people tending their traps daily, and it could end up being a two-month or three-month supplemental fishery to lobstering. Mm-hmm. And like I said, because the cod eats a lot of baby lobsters, it could help bring back the lobstering.
Do you find that economically for Maine fishermen, having access to a number of different fisheries through the year is economically better than just relying on a single species?
It seems to me that is an intelligent approach. And if it was the case that, you know, people were, say, halibut fishing or cod fishing or just crab fishing mm-hmm. in the spring, lobstering during the summer and the early fall, and then scalloping, urchining, or shrimp trapping mm-hmm. in the winter, and they added a more well-rounded approach and attacked each fishery equally, it does seem like it would sustain a larger amount of people in a more healthy manner, and other than just targeting one species and try to make a year's living mm-hmm. out of it.
Monoculture is always dangerous, as the Long Island Sound lobstermen found out.
And Canada National Bank is finding out, because there's a lot of repossessed boats coming down because of lobstering being not as lucrative as it was.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, there was just Monday 2 boats auctioned at Journeys End Marine. And I know that there's probably been a half a dozen or so in the last few months that have been foreclosed on, or whatever the process is, and auctioned off. Mm-hmm. And even people who have been longstanding in the industry and are good fishermen They spent, or they promised to pay back way too much money right as the fishery was headed in a downhill spiral.
Now, was that downhill spiral simply of price, not of abundance?
A combination of bait prices being high and fuel prices in lobsters being less abundant and a shorter run.
All that can combine to...
All that combined together can be very detrimental to the success.
Well, that may, of course, move you up in the standings to get your license. If they don't have a boat, I doubt that...
Renew their license. But a lot of people have this thought in the back of their head that down the road they're going to be able to sell these licenses. And I disagree with being able to sell a state license. I wouldn't want to... I don't... Even though I hold a scallop license that... a fishery people can't get into, I don't think it's right to be able to sell that state license. It is a state resource, and everybody from Kittery to Cobscook has the right to fish the state waters, and even inland. Whether they can survive it or not is another issue, but I do believe that everyone has the right, and if you're not going to use your license, then it ought to be surrendered. And
It could either be made available or... to reduce the fishery, you know, that year.
Right, yeah, less effort.
Seems to me that when licenses are for sale, investors have a tendency to accumulate a whole bunch of those licenses.
It did happen in Canada. I'm not sure when they did do it, but they were allowed to sell lobster licenses. And, of course, they got really expensive really quick. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't like to see that in the state of Maine.
You're going to go be fishing tomorrow, then?
That's the plan, yes. We're going to head out early, and we'll try to be setting out by daylight, which is, or the legal time, which will be around 6:40.
Are we off somewhere in the Muscle Ridge?
Tomorrow we're going to be spending a little time near Sheep Island and Pond Island and Ash Island, and hopefully we can concentrate in one area within those three areas and find some productive fishing.
If you have a really loud radio on board, you'll be able to hear yourself.
I'm probably one of the few people that don't have a radio on my boat. To me, it just takes away from my concentration. I like music, but I have the VHF radio on. I pay attention to my plotter, to my fathometer, and to the boat. And I just get so into it that I just don't like to have any other outside distraction.
Well, it may look easy to we on the outside, but as you say, your senses are everything. On the bottom, feeling every vibration of the boat so you can tell if the motor's...
Yeah, it's very difficult to keep your wire and at fishing. You know, the wire has a shake to it when it fishes, and it's very difficult to keep your boat on its speed that works best for your equipment and watch the fathometer and stay within your lines that you've determined to be fishable lines on your plotter. Mm-hmm. So you're basically watching your plotter, your fathometer, your speed, and your wire.
And it's also, you said you can feel the vibration and all that too. Huh.
Yeah, when things are going good, you don't feel a lot. It's when they're going bad is when you have the feelings.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention there? It could even be something like, other guys that are retired that used to fish or something, you know.
Well, I have a lot of respect for the old timers. A funny story is the guy that's taking my boat for me, Art Alley. He, when I first launched the boat, my radar blew a fuse, my computer screen, the backlight blew on it, so the computer didn't work, and my fathometer, the transducer, went. So he called me up and he said, "Geez, I feel like I've gone back, 50 years. I'm in an old leaky wooden boat with no fathometer, with no computer, and with no radar." He says, "All I need now is a flasher and a CB radio." He said, "Now feel like I'm 20 years younger."
And I bet, if you know the lines that are set up. I mean, when I read the 1920s, 1930s reports of in this area here, it's to find locations. It's a matter of lining up different Camden Hills with a piece of this island or that.
And there's so much to be said for using landmarks or site marks. Like I say, Art went out there and he outfished everybody in the area, lining up windows of houses and notches in islands and cans with trees on islands, than people with the most up-to-date electronics that were fishing not too far from him. So there's a lot to be said for people who have done it so long that they can look and they can see what they're doing and don't have to rely on any kind of piece of electronics.
Have you yourself made a study of those different sorts of lines?
Yes, I have under Art. You know, he's been very good to show me some of his toes and explain to me what to line up and what to do. I have some that I myself off Owl's Head, and just after you tow something 10 to 12 times in a day for 30 minutes, and you do it for 3 or 4 days at a time, and you do it several years in a row, things just start to, you get a feel for an area, and you say, yeah, there's that house right there lining up with this bell buoy, and when I make my turn, I have to make sure that that island is in the crook of this island, and these trees are showing, because that's when I know I'm right on.
Well, that sounds like an awfully important way of knowing your waters, your grounds there. So Art Alley, he's still around then, is he?
Oh, he is. He was out today. I was unable to go with him today. He's fishing. He was fishing today, and he'll be with me tomorrow. And I give him all respect, and I call him the captain, and I'm the deckhand when he's on board because that's what he deserves. And I just I have the utmost respect for him due to the way he's treated me and my boat and kind of helped me along.
It sounds like he's a real reservoir of info, then.
He is a wealth of knowledge. He is a walking encyclopedia of scallop history and knowledge.
Well, I better get to him, then. All right, well, look, thank you very much.
All right, anytime.
You were listening to a talk with sculloper Michael Keating of Owl's Head.